You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, September 22nd, 2010. This is episode 150, Flickr for Churches. Welcome back to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. We are at a landmark episode, episode 150. And joining me for almost every one of those 150 episodes is Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Happy anniversary. It's hard to believe we've done 150 of these. Makes me feel kind of old.
It was only yesterday we were doing number one. 150 doesn't have a lot of value, so to speak, for how we kind of track episodes, because we've done a few extras here and there, but we've been doing this for what, a couple years
coming up
now,
on
right?
3 years.
Yeah, this year
will be 3 full years of podcast. For me, the value is that show notes website, being able to go back and
reference. Isn't that awesome? Yeah,
and send people there. It seems like, you know, every other day I get a question and I can say, oh, I've got just the resource, you know, go and listen to this podcast, listen to this great interview we did, because we've talked to some amazing people along the way. Mm-hmm. and just really learned a lot, and hopefully it's been a benefit to our listeners' ministry efforts.
Yeah, and last week I enjoyed a lot, because we introduced kind of a different dimension, you know, to the show, and that's including content specifically for church secretaries and school secretaries. It's kind of widening our audience a little bit, and hopefully a little something for everybody. We realize we've got different listening audiences out there, groupings of people, whether they be pastors, teachers, you know, administrative staff, dedicated laymen, across all kinds of different technologies. So it's kind of fun to plan the show and provide that kind of content and talk to different people in all those different areas.
And it's kind of fun to see what technology has in store for us next and how we can make use of it in all those ministry mm-hmm. settings. So yep. I think we've got a good stream ahead of us. We just don't quite know what it is, because we don't know what's going to be developing down the pipe. But
that's exciting
to see it develop.
Yeah, that's part of the fun. And we're going to talk about a technology today that's been around for quite some time. It was one of the first, I would say, Web 2.0 tools on the internet. As we talk about Web 1.0, which was more or less HTML pages and brochureware, unidirectional conversations where companies, corporations, even churches would just put out their shingle and say who they are, and you know, a bunch of static pages. And then Web 2.0 came along and introduced this concept of allowing the user, you and me and whoever else is surfing the web and using the web, to contribute content. And today we're going to talk about Flickr, F-L-I-C-K-R, in true Web 2.0 fashion. They've left out a vowel. And most people are probably familiar with Flickr, but if you're not, it is essentially a photo sharing site.
That's right. And with the advent of digital cameras, we all have probably more photos than we know mm-hmm. what to do with. Mm-hmm. You know, take as many as you possibly can, and hopefully you'll get one good one out of the lot. And hopefully there are people out there that are dedicated to taking pictures at their churches and schools, because it's a great way to archive events, to document, you know, what you did at this year's mm-hmm. Event, whatever it may be, so that you can look back next year and see how you did decorations or whatever it was associated with it. Just to promote your congregation, to show that there are real people in your congregation, not just a building and a meeting place on Sunday mornings only, but real people active in the community doing things to reach out in so many different
yep,
ways.
There's stuff happening here is kind of
absolutely.
What I think images can suggest, and there are probably a lot of different uses for churches, both for internal communications and documenting the history of the church and things that are going on within the church, to communicating to other members that there are things going on that they may want to get involved with. And then, as you mentioned, kind of the outreach function, where people from the outside who might be considering coming to your church could look at these photo libraries, this photo journal of your congregation's activities and events, and saying, hey, that looks like something I might want to get involved with. And it's so simple at this point to do this. Flickr has created a lot of different ways for you to easily upload photos that work right with existing programs.
Sure, you can do it on a Windows or Mac-based machine. Mm-hmm. You can use your browser to do it. You can use software on your computer to do it. You can even email in your photos to your Flickr account or use your smartphone to
add photos. That's the way I do it. Yep, you just snap a photo, you hit send to Flickr, and it's up there in your library. Flickr offers you some pretty good capacity as far as how many photos you can upload, but if you want to take that kind of to the next level, which is kind of what I've done for photo storage for my personal stuff, is for $24.95 a year, so $25 a year, you can have unlimited storage. So what I use Flickr for is all of my photos now are on Flickr. So they can be password protected or private if you don't want the world to see them, but it kind of acts as a backup. So they exist on my Mac Mini at home, which is kind of my media center, and they live in iPhoto there. But iPhoto has a way to synchronize all of those photos with Flickr. So now I've got them in the cloud, which does have some benefits, because if I want to show them to anybody, I can just point them to a web address, or I've got them all on my phone then as well, as there's a Flickr app right on my Android phone.
And, you know, you mentioning privatizing, Martin, makes me wonder if Flickr might be a way to do a private pictorial directory. So put the pictures of your members on Flickr, but password protected, and share that password only with the small set, your membership. So there's a potential there. That's one of those ministry topics that we've been struggling with a bit, having that private photo area. So maybe there's a solution for some congregations.
Mm-hmm. And there are all other kinds of things that, you know, creative types could figure out how to use Flickr for congregational purposes. You can think of all kinds of events that could be documented there. One of the neatest things about Flickr, though, is its slideshow feature, easy for me to say, where you can pick a set of photos and say, I want to make this available as a slideshow, and actually embed that on your site. So even though you've got all your stuff on Flickr, you can make it appear as if in your website that there are images that could be viewed in a slideshow kind of format, and it's really easy to do. Some people get a little bit queasy when you start talking about copying and pasting code, but if you go to the Flickr site, they walk you through that. You just click copy code or the embed code, and then you go to your site and you just find the right spot and you paste that into your page. And if you're using like Final Web, that's real easy to do. Most sites support that kind of stuff real seamlessly.
Yeah, I did do a test run on a Final Web sample site. Mm-hmm. So if you want to see an example of a Flickr slideshow embedded on a website, you can check that out. I actually used the awesome Wells Inspirational Images collection to make my slideshow. So while we're talking Flickr, we might as well mention that Wells has made Flickr their home for hosting the inspirational images. I think there's over 1,200 of them, Martin, that have been submitted to Wells. They are copyright and royalty free, and you can use them in your church publications, on your church website, without concern for copyright. You know, you can check that out on each individual image, because the copyright information is just right there available for you.
Flickr provides this thing called a pool or a group pool, so you can actually allow people to contribute to it, and that's the concept that we use for those images. We also ran across a group pool called Wells Churches, which is a pool of all of images of our Wells Churches, whether they be exterior shots, interior shots. So if you go to, I don't know if it's got a URL, we'll put that in the show notes though, but if you want to upload a picture of your church, you can contribute to the pool that way, and all you need is a Flickr account. There are also some other resources that we've referred to previously on the podcast, one called the Church Marketing Lab, and that's something that I have in my RSS reader so that on a pretty regular basis I get to see some very creative people working in church settings who are asking for feedback on designs they've done for whether they be sermon themes or sermon series or different programs of VBS, different promotions that they're doing within their church or school. I find it just kind of fun to see the creativity of church artists, but also kind of give you ideas of things that you maybe could do in your own church as far as a series of or programs that you could run in your church or school.
Yeah, I think this is a really creative use, again, of Flickr, because you think of Flickr just, oh, I'm going to put my digital images from my camera out there. But here these people are actually doing digital design work and sharing it this way among people. So what other ministry type applications are there in the future for things like photo sharing sites like Flickr? It's really exciting to see the creativity there and the potential for this kind of tool to reach across different areas and connect people.
Yep.
So just a really good example. We're wondering if any of our listeners, Martin, are on Flickr.
Right.
And if so, we'd love to see your Flickr sets and connect with you as well, because there is a friendship kind of thing. You can make contacts on Flickr so that you can follow people more easily and stuff. So
comment on photos. Yep. It's
well.
It's all about the social here too. And so if your church, school, or even yourself, whether it be in your business or personal, that there's stuff up there that could be seen by the general public, let us know. We'd love to start collecting some of those examples, and especially if they're ministry examples, I think that would be helpful for churches to see how other churches are using Flickr for ministry purposes. One of the reasons, Sally, that we kind of touched on this topic is that we ran across a Flickr set or a Flickr
group
that suggest, and we've run across this before because we met with refresh my memory, Sally, who we talked to, who was publishing all their logos, their church logos on Flickr. Was that Stephen Stelter?
Maybe that's Stephen Stelter.
Yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh. And that reminded me of another person we ran across on one of these social networks, Diane Lohr. And it turns out she's a graphic designer and uses, I think she uses Flickr, doesn't she?
Yeah, I think that she mentions that in her interview, she makes use of all the social kind of channels for her business of graphic design.
So we got her on the show to talk about her work through Adunate Word and Design. She lives in Watertown, Wisconsin, and works with churches who have a desire to spruce up their image and maybe rebrand themselves and create new logos and other collateral material. And what made me think of that was this Church Marketing Lab, which is exactly what they do, where they publish that kind of stuff and ask for people's reaction to that. And Diane had some great ideas for churches interested in that whole concept of image and how churches should be thinking or approaching this this question that, what should we look like? What should our logo represent? What color theme should we be using, and how that should move through all their other content. It was kind of fun to talk to her.
Yeah, I think it was a great interview. Looking forward to hearing it.
So let's listen to our interview with Diane Lohr of Adunate word in design. If you're interested in what Adunate means, then you have to listen to the interview. So let's listen to Diane. Joining us today is Diane Lohr from Watertown, Wisconsin, of Adunate Word and Design. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for asking me.
The focus of the show today is on, well, we just finished up a conversation about Flickr and posting designs there and how churches and schools may want to take advantage of that. But we'd love to talk to you about content and design, and that is your specialty at Adunate. But maybe before we jump into that, maybe give our listeners a little bit of an introduction, your background, you know, family, church, and then how your business got started.
Sure. I am a member of St. Mark's in Watertown, and my husband and I have four children. They're all grown and out and about now.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations on that.
Professionally in communications for about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I started with a magazine publication and a marketing agency. And then while my children attended Lakeside Lutheran High School, I served there as its communication coordinator.
Oh, okay. Did not know that. Very cool.
Yeah.
And then, go ahead.
For the last 5 years, I've had my own business, Adunate. And I work out of my home, and I help businesses and small organizations with their publications and their communication.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to tell us about that name that you chose for your business, Diana. It's very unique. Is there a story behind Adunate?
Yeah, Adunate is a Latin word. It means unite or integrate. And I chose this because I work with both words and design, and they are the power of visual communication. And you choosing a Latin word also gave me an opportunity to put my high school Latin to use.
There you go.
That was a big important point there.
Of course, yes. Now your Latin professor is probably very pleased.
Sure.
All right. Well, at Adunate Word and Design, one of the reasons that we were attracted to this kind of conversation was you do a lot of work with, it seems like, churches and providing them with some design ideas, some thinking. You do some consulting. Tell us a little bit about how you so far have been interacting with churches.
I got started working with churches through Cornerstone Stewardship Ministry.
Ah, okay.
And they are a super team of professionals who assist churches with their funding and stewardship goals. And when I started with Cornerstone, they contracted me to design their promotional pieces. And together we did work for about more than 40 churches.
Mm.
Since then, I've started working with churches with their logos or their promotional outreach materials, newsletters, online presence, you name it. If you need help with your print or web or social media, that's what I do.
Do you think as you're working with churches, they're beginning to understand maybe the value of design and approaching this from a more systematic way as far as, you know, who are we, what do we want to quote-unquote look like?
Yep, I think they are, and churches are wise if they do that, if they see that value. We want to present ourselves to other people and show them who we are, what we believe, and graphic design does that. Graphic design isn't just looking pretty or a pretty piece of art. Graphic design communicates a message, and that's what we do by our logo mm-hmm. or the brochure we put out.
Boy, we could really use your help in Sleepy Eye, Diane, listening to you. Sounds really exciting. let's say you were taking us on, or some church or school out there in general, what kind of things should we begin to ask ourselves about brand and image? You know, are there certain questions that we should explore to try and nail those kind of ideas down?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because that's a good question. And oftentimes organizations forget to ask questions of themselves, and that's a common mistake. You know, not just churches make that mistake, but any organization does. But you have to know who you are in order to tell others about yourself. So when a professional graphic designer sits down with a client to work on their identity, such as a logo, the first thing we do is ask them a lot of questions, and we use this information then to develop a creative brief. And basically, a creative brief is a plan of action. So some of those questions we might ask would be obvious, such as, what is your church's name? Where are you located? For example, are you in a metropolitan area, inner city, or are you small town? I'll ask them about their members and the demographics of the members, like their age groups and overall nationality, and are they blue collar, white collar, what are the attitudes of the membership, and things like that. Then I'll also ask more in-depth questions. For example, what is the purpose of your identity? Are you looking for an identity for your church, or maybe just for a fund appeal, or maybe just a newsletter? And I will ask, who is the targeted audience then for that purpose? Is it just your members, or is it perhaps the whole community? Those are important questions, because different purposes and different audiences would require a different logo or a different identity. Here's an example. Let's say your church is going to do a fund appeal to pay for a new school. For the most part, your audience would be church members only. And they already know what you believe, and they already know the saving gospel, so you don't necessarily have to convey that in your logo. Instead, your logo should convey something based on children or Christian education and stewardship. Other questions I might ask are, does your church have any unique physical characteristics, like are you up on a hill, or do you have a beautiful stained glass window, or are you associating yourself with a particular color? And lastly, I might ask technical things, such as, how are you going to print your logo, or can you afford full color printing, or are you on a budget and do you want to just go with two colors, things like that. Mm-hmm. Those all determine the logistics of the logo. Mm-hmm.
Boy, those are great questions. I'm smiling because I'm thinking that maybe just a drawing of the church isn't quite adequate to satisfy all those questions that you're asking. So that's what we're using here in Sleepy Eye. It's a beautiful drawing, but it has nothing more to it. So good stuff.
I think that's just in my experience, that's probably pretty typical, Sal. You're not alone. That many churches have, you know, maybe invested some time and money into having an artist render, you know, the church in a line drawing or something like that, and they're very proud of that. I see that a lot on web homepages. Is that something you see a lot as well, Diane?
Yes, I do, and that is a very nice way of presenting yourself. Depending on how you do it, it also can be somewhat generic. There may be more you can do to separate yourself from every other church in town. Perhaps, you know, specific colors convey certain messages, uh-huh. or certain typefaces convey another message. If you find yourself, your personality of your church is contemporary, you would want to choose colors and a typeface that would convey that message.
Uh-huh.
there are so many elements to graphic design that help communicate things, and you can bring that out in your logo.
Sure. Now, marketing and identity design and logo design can be very trendy, just like any other industry. What are the current trends in design right now? Is there a particular style, typography, colors, even dimensions of logos that you see as being very popular right now?
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Their trends are always changing and developing, just, you know, and we are such a fickle society, so they change even faster.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I often try to stay away from trends, simply for that matter.
Uh-huh.
What you might choose today for your logo because it's trendy, even faster now, within a year or two, that's going to be outdated. Instead, you want to focus on traits for your logo that fit you as a congregation. What is your style? What can you convey to your audience about yourself? And that's what you want to focus on,
mm-hmm.
not what a current trend is, so to speak.
Right. Something that's more timeless, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah.
What about when churches and schools are ready to make this step and do some design work? You know, how would they go about choosing a designer or web developer? What kind of things should they be looking for?
I'm glad you asked that question, too. Naturally, I'm going to encourage a church to seek a professional designer, but that's because that's my industry.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, though, anything... just like anything in life, I guess, you get what you pay for, and that includes graphic design or web design. As I mentioned, there are many elements of design that can affect how successful you are in conveying your message, and it also can affect the cost to you when you need to have it professionally printed.
Mm-hmm.
Good design can save you lots of money. So seeking a professional designer can be costly, but in the end it can also save you money.
Mm-hmm.
When you're looking for a designer, look at their website, read their blogs, and get a feel for the style and types of design that person does. A good designer will ask you, the client, lots of questions, and a good designer will listen well, and they will involve the client in that design process.
Mm-hmm. So, talking about the technology side of your business, what tools do you use? Do you use some design tools that are fairly standard in the design industry? Do you use any web-based tools or Web 2.0 websites or applications that help you do your work?
Yep, I do. I use Adobe products for designing,
mm-hmm.
Such as Adobe InDesign and Illustrator,
mm-hmm.
and Photoshop,
yep.
and Dreamweaver and Flash. Dreamweaver and Flash are web programs for creating websites.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also use a lot of social media. I love social media.
Uh-huh.
WordPress, blogging, Facebook, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Yeah, in fact, we got connected with you through just a dialogue that was going on LinkedIn, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that social media is a wonderful, wonderful gift from God. I feel if churches aren't using any kind of social media, then they are wasting an opportunity for outreach. It's one of the best outreach tools we have today.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, social media is free.
Right.
And it's such an easy way of getting your message out to the greatest number of people.
Yeah, just takes the time to do it. And congregations are beginning to realize that they need to jump on. Certainly encourage their members to live their faith online is obviously a good start, where that is such a temptation not to do because you can remain very anonymous. But obviously God would call us to be ourselves, you know, online as well as offline.
Yep, very good.
Well, that was excellent information, Diane. If somebody wanted to engage your services or look at some of the things that you have done, where could we send them?
You could send them to my website. It is www.adunate.com, and that's spelled ADUNATE.com.
That's probably another advantage of using a Latin word. You could get the URL, right?
Yeah. And it was at the top of the alphabet.
That's right. So you're
yeah. Smart design.
You're up there in the phone book, too. So you've got some marketing smarts there, too. So very good. So adunate.com. And so if a congregation is interested in learning a little bit more, they're going to find your information there. Do you also write a blog there?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And there's a link to my blog from mm-hmm. my website, mm-hmm. or you could just go to adunate.com/blog.
Very good. Diane, thank you so much, and blessings on your work, especially as you work with our churches and schools. I think that's an important area of ministry that should not be overlooked. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, and God's blessings to you.
Thank you. Thanks again to Diane for sharing her thoughts on graphic design with us. It sounds like she has fun with what she's doing.
Yeah, and that interview was also very timely, Martin, because just this week we had a question come into the Wells Tech podcast. And if you have a question for us, you can email us at wellstech.wells@wells.net.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what Heather Hollop did. She asked if there were any graphic designers out there
that were
Wells related. And so we are actually going to go ahead and set up a new page on the Wells Tech
right.
Wiki. We'll have a link to that in the show notes. And if you're a graphic designer and would like to post, hang out your shingle there on the Wells Tech Wiki, you certainly could do that. But we'll have a link to Diane's resources as well as others that we're familiar with, and we'd like to grow that page so that we can send people there if they're looking for that kind of work.
Mm-hmm. Thanks again, Diane, for what you do and for sharing some of your time with us and expertise. Let's move on to news and tech, Sally.
Yeah, there's a new Twitter on the block, although I can't say that I have it yet, but Twitter made an announcement just recently that they are going to be updating Twitter, and they have a video that gives you an overview of what to expect with the new Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are a Twitter user and are interested in the changes that are coming, you might want to check this out. Perry Lund actually gave us the heads up on this, who's one of our listeners out in Iowa, just kind of let us know that they are rolling out these new features. Looks like it's going to be a lot more interactive. There's
mm-hmm.
going to be mapping associated with it and different features that haven't been part of Twitter to this point.
They can get more a true, I think, Web 2.0 application and trying to compete with a lot of the third-party Twitter applications that have been built both on the desktop and on the web, like TweetDeck and those kinds of things that allow that. I was really surprised to learn that a majority of users who Twitter or use Twitter usually go to the Twitter website to do that, which is kind of odd because I rarely ever do that. I don't know how you interact with Twitter, Sally. Do you go to the website or do you have an app that you use?
I'm kind of 50-50, Martin. I do use a TweetDeck
mm-hmm.
On my iPod Touch. So
that's a great app.
And sometimes I actually, phone in my tweets from the road because I'm not on an iPhone, but I do have the ability to text in my tweets if we're out and about wherever. But a lot of times I go to the website, and it's kind of a 50-50 kind of thing
mm-hmm.
of user experience, because there's things
simple.
The website offers that
sure.
that are easy and straightforward, and there's things that other tools offer as well.
Mm-hmm. I just read this morning, this was only like 20 minutes ago, that there was an exploit on the, I don't know if it was on the old Twitter site or the new Twitter site or both, a JavaScript exploit that even if you went to the page some undesirable pop-ups would start appearing on your computer. So that was big news today. So I think they've actually cleaned that up. But I'm not sure that the folks at Twitter are always on top of their technology. When Twitter first started, they were constantly having issues with what was called the fail whale. You remember that, Sally?
Absolutely.
And so Twitter was down. Twitter was down, not a very reliable thing, which is actually it kind of was working against Twitter, because a lot of schools and other organizations were thinking of using Twitter as a true reliable communications tool, whether it be for emergency services or getting the news out. And Twitter was not helping themselves by being so unreliable, and things like this don't help them either. So I think Twitter is still an evolving or emerging technology that we're still trying to figure out, where is its sweet spot. And maybe they're a technology looking for a solution at this point, but it'll be interesting. There's no denying that Twitter is huge, right? Just the numbers themselves tend to suggest that. And you can't watch a TV show nowadays without some kind of Twitter promotion, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So. Absolutely. So, and if you're into the whole personal learning network thing, Twitter is a powerful tool to connect with others and learn from them. So yep.
We have a couple of WealthTech listeners who are very faithful in posting stuff to Twitter, and I've learned a lot just in following them and clicking on some of the links and exploring some of the concepts that they promoted on Twitter. So I think certainly in educational circles there's a use for this this microblogging sharing network that's been created. So good stuff.
Yep. We'll see how the new Twitter works out, hopefully better.
Yep. And it's a staged rollout. So like you mentioned, Sally, you don't have it. I just checked this morning. I don't have it. So it's apparently some people do, but it's I think they're just rolling it out gradually over the country. So it hasn't come to Milwaukee or Slinger yet, and it doesn't sound like it's come to Sleepy Eye either.
No, but I'm sure Sleepy Eye is at the top of the list. Yeah.
Right.
Tech capital.
Yep. Picks of the week. What do we have?
Well, I read an interesting blog post. This is from the Languages blog, an EdTech-oriented blog by a teacher, and I can't recall her name right now, but she does do some good stuff. And what she did here was she looked at the concept of school information network channels. And what she means by that is all of this Web 2.0 technology that you're making use of, organizing it and making it easy for your intended recipients to find the information that you are producing. Very school focused, obviously, in this ed tech post, but I think it applies to congregations as well. And what she looked at was, all the different channels, things like Facebook and Flickr and Twitter and Ning and whatever those other channels might be, and trying to organize those so that it's easy for the site visitor to get access to them. And she kind of explains her thought process in this blog post, and even goes as far as to post a mind map that she did where she looked at all of this. So some parts of their site are just hubs or places to post links to all the other things that they're doing. But without having to make one website the be-all and end-all of their web presence, they've organized it really well so that people can find and link to the information they're looking for really easily. Mm-hmm. So just a good read, good food for thought as to how you're organizing your Web 2.0 content so that you're maximizing people's ability to find what they're looking for and to communicate with you. So it's not just one-way communication from you, but those communication channels are open so that people can comment back and give you their feedback and that kind of thing. Check it out. It's called Creating School Information Network Channels. But think of it in terms of schools or congregations, because we're all just trying to do a good job with the communication tools we have available to us.
That was an interesting read, and it's probably one of the first places that I've seen all this brought together, in a cohesive, what I would call almost a communications plan. So what they've done is they've actually created a committee called the Social Network Channel Committee, where they're exploring all of the available options and then determining what the best tool is for the job and how to coordinate that. And I think that's, with all of the channels that are available today, it's really important to really think through what each is best for and then coordinate their use, as opposed to the maybe the temptation would be more of a scattergun approach, where we hear Twitter's popular, so we got to be on Twitter, or we know that YouTube's possible, so we want to make sure that we're represented there, as opposed to asking the why question, which is what they've done, and then they've kind of stratified what should go where. It's a really interesting read. So that was by Sylvia Tolisano.
Sylvia Tolisano. I remember that name. No. Yep. Thank you for finding that.
Nope, no problem. That's the Languages Blog, the magic of learning. Now I'm interested to read what other stuff they've written here as well. So sounds like some very thoughtful stuff here.
I follow Sylvia on Twitter, so that's how I found her. Tying into our Twitter conversation.
Good idea. Okay. All right, my pick of the week is actually a tool, a Web 2.0 tool, of course, that Maren McPeak brought up when we interviewed her this past summer. She's out in Citrus Heights, California, although I've been using it for a couple years and really an essential tool in my productivity workflow. I got a funny name, but a very practical tool called Toodledee-Doo, T-O-O-D-L-E-D-O. It's basically a task list manager. It's online, and it provides all kinds of ways for you to manage, to record, to track, and manage your tasks. Let me bring up the website here, and it's toodledee-doo.com. And one of the reasons that I use it is that one of the core principles of the methodology that I use for productivity is GTD, and they use something called, or they recommend you use something called contexts, meaning you put your to-dos in groupings by context, where you are. So for instance, you have a context called errands. So if you're out and about, you need an errands list. You have one called computer. So if you're at the computer, you have a computer list of tasks that you can do with those resources available to you. So clearly I can't do errands from my office, so I don't need to look at my errands list. But when I'm out at Home Depot, I would look at my errands list. What Toodledee-Doo does, and does very well, is they provide a mobile version. So on my phone, I can bring up the website, and I can look at that list by context. They have all kinds of other bells and whistles that I find really helpful as well. You can sync this to Outlook. You can sync this to other clients that might be desktop based. You can add due dates. I mentioned context. You can put goals in there. You can see it in a calendar view. So if you have things that need to be scheduled on a certain day, you can look at it that way. You can use prioritization. You can add notes, tags. It has a great search tool. You can share it. There's an iPhone app if you want to use that on an iPhone. You can import and export data. For those of you that like a paper-based to-do list, you can actually print out what they call a foldable booklet. So they give you step-by-step instructions, kind of line drawings, of once you've printed this out, how you should fold it and cut it. So you've got this little handy little book that you can put in your pocket that is basically your to-do list. So you can print that out on a regular basis. It has reminders, all kinds of integration tools. Totally free. There are premium versions, of course, if you want to get some of the other bells and whistles, but I find that the free version is great. It works. It does exactly what it's supposed to do. And for those of you that need to manage a to-do list, this is a great tool. They actually have a comparison chart. One of the other popular ones online is Remember the Milk. I think a lot of people are very fond of that. But this has some other advantages over that, and this little graph shows you what those advantages are. So toodle-dee-doo, a tool that I could actually not do without at this point.
I was just looking at that comparison chart, thinking about comparing it to Remember the Milk. Mm-hmm. I am not a Remember the Milk user, but my husband is. And one thing that he has to do is he has to pay for his Remember the Milk. He doesn't use the free account in order to use the iPod application.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like Toodle-Doo allows you to use the free application in conjunction with the iPhone app. The iPhone app, it looks like, costs $3.99. Mm-hmm. So that's not that bad for an iPhone app. And right. And then it works with your free account. So you're not on the hook. I think he maybe pays $25 a year for Remember the Milk. So
Right. Price-wise,
it looks like it's a little bit more affordable to go this route.
Yeah, they've made some nice enhancements. They continue to improve the product, but for my purposes, the free version works just fine, and it really allows you enough flexibility to kind of manage your tasks whatever way you want to manage them. So, and that's a really important aspect for me, is that I need to be able to have some flexibility so I can manage by context if I want to do that, but that it's also portable, so that my to-do lists are with me when I want to do stuff. It's not just when I have my computer open. So, good tool. Check it out if you are in the market for a task manager.
It's always a good time to get started with to-do lists.
That's right.
Can't go
no
wrong
time
there,
like
so.
The present,
there you
I always
go.
Say. All right, let's move on to community feedback.
Sure. First up, we heard from one of our own, Martin. This is a comment from Adam Miller, who's part of our staff at the Senate Administration Building, one of our programmers. And he had sent an email talking about Microsoft's plans to issue a blanket license for nonprofit groups outside of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's something that would be an advantage for our missionaries around the world.
That's what I was thinking. So if you are in a mission field or someplace obviously outside of the U.S., you may want to take a look at this link, because there seems to be some value in this this blanket licensing that they've put together that may save you some money, especially if you've got a number of people that could take advantage of this in your organization.
Very good link. Thanks, Adam.
Mm-hmm.
And next up, we have a little bit of an audio treat for our listeners.
We do. My sister-in-law, Deb Witte, who is married to my brother-in-law, Dan Witte, down in Florida, Mayaca City, Florida, forwarded to me, and this wasn't through the podcast, but I'm sure she won't mind me playing it because it was absolutely hilarious, a Lutheran airline audio clip. It's about 3 minutes long. We're going to play it now, but thank you, Deb, for sharing this with me, and I'm going to share it with the class, because we Lutherans love to laugh at ourselves, and I had a good time with this particular audio file. So listen to the Lutheran Airlines.
We are pleased to announce Lutheran Airlines is now operating in Minnesota and also serving Wisconsin, Northern Michigan, and North and South Dakotas. If you're traveling soon, consider Lutheran Air, the no-frills airline. You're all in the same boat on Lutheran Air. Here, flying is an uplifting experience. There is no first class on Lutheran Air. Meals are potluck. Rows 1 through 6 bring rolls. 7 through 15 bring a salad. 16 through 21 a hot dish. And 22 through 30 a dessert. Basses and tenors, please sit in the rear of the aircraft. Everyone is responsible for his or her own baggage. All fares are by free will offering, and the plane will not land till the budget is met. Pay attention to your flight attendant, who will acquaint you with the safety system aboard the Lutheran airline. Okay, now, listen up. I'm only going to say this once. In the event of a sudden loss of cabin pressure, I am frankly going to be real surprised and so will Captain Olson, because we fly around 2,000 feet or so, so loss of cabin pressure would probably mean the second coming or something of that nature, and I wouldn't bother with those little masts and the rubber hoses. You're going to have much bigger problems to worry about than that. Just stuff those back in their little holes. Probably the masks fell out because of turbulence, which, to be perfectly honest with you, we're going to have quite a bit of that at around 2,000 feet. It's sort of like driving across a plowed field, but after a while you get used to it. In the event of a water landing, I'd say forget it. Saying the Lord's Prayer is the only thing to do, and you just hope that you get to the part about forgive us for our sins as we forgive those who sin against us, which some people say trespass against us, which isn't right, but what can you do? The use of cell phones on the plane is strictly forbidden, not because they may confuse the plane's navigation system, which is by the seats of the pants all the way. No, it's because cell phones are a big pain in the wazoo. And if God had meant you to use a cell phone, he would have put your mouth on the side of your head. Now start lunch about noon. It's a buffet style with the coffee pot up front. Then we have the hymn sing. The hymnals are in the seat packets in front of you. Don't take yours with you, by the way, when you go, or I'm going to be real upset, and I'm not kidding. Right now, it is time I will say grace. Come, Lord Jesus, be our guest, and let these gifts to us be blessed. Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, may we land in Duluth, or pretty close.
There's a lot of truth to that, Sally.
I can't imagine where they got that guy. Never heard anybody talk like that before.
Nobody out by you, is there?
No.
Oh, yeah. The potluck part is precious.
Yeah. We just had a potluck just like that on Sunday.
Is that right?
They threw L, bring a main dish. Uh-huh. That was totally.
Was there green jello?
Oh, there's always green jello. Everything.
All right.
Good stuff.
All right. Thank you, Deb. Appreciate the laugh today.
All right. Next up, we heard from Gail Potratz, our semi-regular classroom technology coordinator. Or
correspondent.
Consultant. That's the word. It's a C word. I knew that. And we are so excited Gail is going to join us next week. Finally, after a summertime hiatus, we get to have Gail back on the podcast.
She needed
next
a break
week.
From us, I think, is how that worked out.
This week, Gail shared a link to a blog post. It's done by on the Free Technology for Teachers blog by Richard Byrne. Excellent blog with loads of great resources. This particular post is called 5 Tools to Create and Administer Quizzes Online. So if you're a teacher and you'd like to offer a quiz option online, Richard goes through and evaluates different tools and gives you links to getting started with those, how-to information, that kind of thing, including Google Forms and Zoho Challenge. Both of those are online office suites that you can that have the option of creating online quizzes or forms.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of standalone quiz type resources: ProProfs Quizmaker, Studio. Or My Studio, with a cool spelling, Studio, and then That Quiz at thatquiz.org. So if you're looking for online quiz possibilities, you want to check out this blog post from Gail. Thanks for that.
Very extensive blog post. So you've got all kinds of options here. So very good.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier in the show, Martin, that last week was a special show for us as we kicked off a look at the office setting, church and school offices. We heard from Nancy Lieberton saying, what a great idea. Last January, we had a small group of Phoenix area WELS secretaries get together, but we haven't been able to meet again. hope to meet in the future, and we'll be looking for more Wells Tech info. So thanks for that. We encourage any of our listeners to share ideas and information via the Wells Tech Wiki. Perhaps you have a great bulletin insert that you want to share, or great resources for different forms to use within your congregation. And the Wells Tech Wiki is a platform where you can do that. So we encourage you to build up that area of the wiki and share your secretary resources.
Cool. Thanks, Nancy, for commenting on the blog. That is great. And just a reminder, if you are not a church or school secretary, but you know one, this would be a great opportunity for you to communicate with them, reach out to them and say, boy, have I got something special for you. We've got this podcast that's running a series just for what you do. And we'd love to grow our audience by church and school secretaries everywhere, because, again, I'm really looking forward to this series, and I can't wait to talk again next month about some other stuff that I think would be helpful to that group of people.
We have a lot to learn and a lot to share in that space.
Yep. Well, we're really looking forward. That's why we started the wiki, right?
To
capture that stuff.
And lastly, we can't have a community feedback section without mentioning our tweeting teacher, Jason Schmidt. He is serving at Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska, and he always brings us great resources. And there are actually three different ideas that Jason shared this week that we wanted to talk about.
We just kind of cherry pick Jason's stuff. I mean, we can't share all the stuff that he shares. If you're interested in following Jason, that would probably be a good idea. You get all the stuff that Jason tweets about.
That's right. He's Jason Schmidt 123 on Twitter. Mm-hmm. But for now, we're going to talk about a couple of ideas that he shared. One is he's having his own students record their memory work and posting them for podcast purposes. So they're making a recording, and then they're able at home to listen to that recording as they're studying their memory work for the week. I thought that was an excellent idea. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of kids, I'm sure, that would benefit from that. Not just the having the resources available, but actually going through the process of creating them themselves probably does a lot to lock in those memory verses as well.
Yeah, so, and you throw in a little technology, makes it a little bit cooler. Probably ramps up the pressure a little bit too, though, I would think.
Yeah, and he did include a link as he was talking about this to a page about how to create RSS XML feeds for podcasts. Mm-hmm. So he had these audio files. He wanted to make sure that they had the proper feed associated with them. So this is a good resource to look at if you're doing something similar.
Yep.
Next up, he gave us a link to a Google Doc. It is actually a spreadsheet, I believe, where someone has gone to the trouble of comparing blogs, wikis, and Google Docs in chart format. And it's quite an extensive comparison. They look at the benefits of each, the drawbacks to each. They have examples of each from a classroom perspective. So if you are just dipping your toe in the water, or if you have a brand new project and you aren't quite sure whether a blog, a wiki, or a podcast would be the best platform for hosting that project, then this chart is here for you. The interesting thing about the chart is it's a Google Doc, and we can't really trace back the source of the chart. Mm-hmm. So we aren't quite sure who put all the work into this, but it is well done and highly recommended by our friend Jason. So if you're looking for something along those lines, then check it out.
Jason, maybe you can tweet who was the author or creator of that. That would be helpful, and we could put that in the show notes.
And then lastly, Jason shared a link to an exhaustive page of interactive whiteboard resources. And again, someone's gone to the trouble of putting together some great resources where they look at all the different possibilities for interactive whiteboards. They have links to all different companies that are selling interactive whiteboards. They have tutorials and templates for interactive whiteboards, as well as interactive websites that you can use on your whiteboard. And then finally, different software that you can download to use with your whiteboard. Mm-hmm. This looks like a one-stop shopping place for interactive whiteboards. And it does have a link or a notation at the bottom that the page was created with support from a U.S. Department of Education PT3 grant joined together.
Okay.
So There's some grant money behind this, and they've definitely done a good job of pulling together quite a few smart board resources. So yep. If you're a smart board user, you want to tag this page for sure.
And just a little plug for Jason. You may remember, our listeners may remember, that Jason has recently been certified by SMART for smart board training. So if you're interested in that kind of stuff, Jason's your man.
And that's it for community feedback this week, Mark.
All right. Next week, what's happening, Sally?
Well, we're looking forward, as I mentioned earlier, to Gail being back with us.
Yep.
We're going to have our EdTech-oriented show, and we're going to kick off this new school year with a look at technology professional development for teachers. So how you get your staff in a mode of professional development, kind of a systematic look at that. I think Gail especially has implemented something new there at Emmanuel in New London this year, as to how they're doing their staff professional development, and we want to hear about that. In addition, Gail was good enough to make contact with Dr. Bernard Bull, who is a professor at Concordia University in Mequon, and he's in the education department, and he's going to give us a little bit of feel for what he's doing in terms of educating our future educators and their use of technology, and especially their use of standards as they look at the things they should be doing in the classroom. And I think it'll be an excellent interview you'll want to tune in for.
That'll tie in nicely with the book, you know, that we're reading, which is Leading 21st Century Schools. And we have a little bit of news related to that book, don't we, Sally?
We do. We were able to make contact with one of the authors, Lynn Schrum, and Lynn's going to join us for an interview as well. So we hope to have that coming up in the next few weeks on the Wells Tech Podcast.
We're really looking forward to that. We don't get too many authors on the show, and especially about the book that we're reviewing. So that'll be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to that. Some good stuff.
Yeah.
So nice pick, Sally. Yeah, nice pick.
I think so.
All right, let's close the show with the music of Corbin Creek, their song Epitaph from their album Could It Be Me. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Don't you weep
for
my affair.